Hale Varsity Magazine presents the Hale Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hale Varsity.
Day by day, day by day, we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you on a Tuesday. Hale Varsity Radio, Hale Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore. A Thursday visit, but loaded up today. A lot to talk about. What a day in sports for you. On to November. A former coach said the games won in November are the ones best remembered. I've screwed that quote up. I won't name the coach. But he's right. And a great opportunity. Got game six going on in Major League Baseball tonight. Cubbies and the Tribe. College football playoff reveal. Any surprises in store for that? And then an amazing episode of BTN's The Journey tonight on Sam Foltz. So we are loaded up. Mitch Sherman and Kevin Suits in this hour to talk some college football. Kevin Suits is a good dude. And those good dudes get to hang with Eddie Vedder. He did so in Wrigley. Well, or at least we'll pump up the fact that him and Eddie were jamming with some old style. Rick Pizzo in hour two. As soon as Mr. Pizzo is done with BTN Live, Blair Kirchhoff has done a lot of college football work. You know him best recently for doing a lot of great coverage with the Royals, but he's in on Major League Baseball. He's in on college football. So Blair Kirchhoff with us also in hour two. And then Bill Friedman, the producer of tonight's Journey, remembering Sam Foltz as we close out hour number two. Numbers to join us here on Hale Varsity Radio, 466-3776, 466-3776. Toll free where you can hear us on the Hale Varsity Network, 1-800-825-5865, and on Twitter at Schmidt Radio, and also at TJ underscore Henning. Also fire us off something on Hale Varsity at Hale Varsity. So here is what you have this week. Wonderful picture on Twitter by a fan sent to John Perella. And I don't know if Perella's handing out Monster or energy drinks last night for the trick-or-treaters, but somebody brought him a whole slew, or maybe he just has them on hand. Getting ready for Ohio State Week. And something stick with you growing up, and I can't even tell you why, but shampoo commercials. Just hang with me for a second. Shampoo commercials. TJ, you usually just kind of buzz your hair so you can scrimp and save on the shampoo.
Well, I use nice stuff.
No, I'm sure you do. But I'm just saying there's just not a lot of product. I got a mop. Fair. The best thing going I have is my hair.
Looks
so
good.
So that's what I got rocking. But it was either like Selsun Blue or Head and Shoulders. And this poor chump just had snowfall on each shoulder. The dandruff issue. And never screw up a first impression was the tag. I host it. I am not Don Draper. So I look at this week for Nebraska, and it kind of reminds me of that commercial. A second chance to make not a first impression, but another national perception. As bad as Monday Night Football was last night, the cool thing was they're running promos galore. Saturday night, prime time, Nebraska, Ohio State. I mean, Nebraska's in that conversation now. Their ranking is right up there. And it's going to be the other game that's watched, certainly in this state, but around the Big Ten footprint. And I don't know what the West Coast will do. They'll probably flip on their Pac-12 game and see how Washington or Colorado or Wazoo are doing. But then you have Bama and LSU. I mean, that's major. That's awesome. That's down on the bayou. But Nebraska's right there. Headline act. Opportunity there to be seized. Another crack at it. And you get opportunities to make good in college football. But you usually have to wait. Nebraska doesn't. Obviously, you got to move on. Trey Foster told us yesterday, this loss won't linger with the team. They're fired up. They're ready to go. And what you have now is an immediate chance to flip it around and make another amazing impression. Get that perception thing. That's also a double-edged sword. Great. You played Ohio. You played Wisconsin well enough to win. Didn't get it done. You don't drop much in the polls. You garnered and gained a massive amount of respect from the national talking heads that have spent the previous few weeks killing you. But don't screw it up for obvious reasons. Most importantly, the West race. You got a bunch of teams just a game back of you. Two, bigger and better. Stranger things can happen. You get hot, you stay confident, you get on a roll. Maybe Nebraska's being talked about in 2 weeks. Not just a team that's on the outside looking into the college football playoff, but a team that is right there. We'll talk to Mitch Sherman about the college football playoff, specifically where Wisconsin's at. I'm interested in that, what he sees with Nebraska. But if you're Mike Riley, you've done this already. You've showed the 6 to 8 plays that screwed your night up Saturday. You make adjustments with them. You get with Coach Langsdorf and Tommy and figure out what's a go-to. Because that's going to be major for you Saturday night in Columbus. Nebraska has been lost offensively because the O-line's hurt. And from a passing percentage standpoint, completion-wise, Tommy Armstrong's 49% in Big Ten play. Okay? It's not been great. Not all his fault, but it is what it is. Nebraska ran the ball well enough to not be one-dimensional and turn it into Air Tommy Saturday night. They can't regress. They need to improve. I don't know if they'll improve or not, but they can't regress this Saturday night with this second crack at it immediately. You're still in people's top-of-mind awareness of a team that, all right, let me kind of check out Nebraska. And again, from a Nebraska standpoint, to make this jump to be to matter, to really matter. And it'll be awesome Saturday. But Coach Riley's showed the plays that hosed you. Continue to preach that Wisconsin, Nebraska, these teams kind of can, and Ohio State too. But more so, I mean, Ohio State's got to win out. Nebraska's got to win out. Wisconsin needs some help, but they still too need to win out. And then there's Michigan. So control what you can control. And that's go out and get a W. And if you're Ohio State, this is your conversation. Well, you know, this is Urban to the Bechster and everybody else. You know, our offense is in a funk. And it's been in a funk the last 4 weeks compared to what they usually are. Mm. Okay, let's talk context. Compared to what Ohio State usually is. And when they had Cardale, they could go downfield. They were incredibly tough to beat. And they won the national championship 2 years ago. You don't have a downfield threat. You probably do. You probably have 50 of them on the team, but you can't get it there or it's not worked out. What defenses have been doing is just keeping everything in front. Hold them in check. And the other factor of this, too, is Urban freaked out having to run Barrett as much as he did against Indiana to get out of there because these mobile quarterbacks, while dynamic and game-changing against defenses, they're also the guys that aren't built like a linebacker. They're not. They can get hurt. They can go down. So he's reluctant to run him a ton. I think that's going to be Saturday night, big time. Who's willing to run their quarterback more? Tommy Armstrong had 13 carries, got a touchdown on the ground. Per Coach Riley, missed some keeps versus the zone read give. Which team's willing to run their quarterback more Saturday night, and which quarterback can get those yards? I love Ohio State's defense. They've got two NFL guys on the defensive line for sure. They've got a stud linebacker that flies around the football. They've got Hooker and Latimer in the secondary. They're incredible tacklers. Their speed's phenomenal. But from a know your assignment, do your job standpoint, I think they're a little less likely to be so locked in and rigid compared to Wisconsin. Wisconsin's got some ballers too, but Wisconsin's this system. I mean, it is blueprinted and down cold and Everybody's working in lockstep. Ohio State's not quite as robotic, and I'm complimenting Wisconsin by saying they're robotic. They're just that fierce and awesome defensively as a group. Ohio State just not quite there because of their youth, right? So if I'm Nebraska, I can take advantage of some busted assignments in the option game. You just got to be willing to do it. Do you roll with that, TJ, or do you have Tommy dropping back and you pray to God you're 9-18 again on third and sevens? Because where Nebraska didn't do well on third down was third and three, third and four. Those were some of their missed third downs, more so in the pass game than what they actually did throw in the football on third down. You're supposed to be 25% on a normal night against Wisconsin on third down. Nebraska was 50%, and they were even better, 4-6 on third and seven or more. Hello.
Yeah.
Make the quarterback run game, and you've heard it all year, and you saw what happened against Oregon by using that. Make them stop you. I know they're supposed to be ready for it. I know they'll probably spy Tommy Armstrong with some of their amazing talent. Great, make them stop you. And conversely, Nebraska will anticipate, I think, this three-headed monster between Samuel, Weber, and Barrett, because they're going to make Barrett throw the ball to beat him.
And it may go back to a little bit last year where it seemed like the coaches were a little afraid to run Tommy because they were afraid to get him hurt. Mm-hmm. And you heard this offseason talk of other coaches anonymously saying, hey, behind Nebraska, behind Tommy, there's not a whole lot of depth. I wish we could play those guys. Mm-hmm. So I think that goes a lot into it. Earlier you mentioned Ohio State's offense. The last 4 weeks, they've averaged between 24 to 38 points. The first 4 weeks of the season, they averaged 45 to 77 points. So obviously not clicking like they used to, but I mean, remember people, this team still beat Bowling Green by 67. They beat Tulsa by 45, Rutgers 58. They beat a good Oklahoma team by 21 on the road. So this, although this team is struggling right now, it's kind of a bit of a sleeping giant a little bit.
Okay, so they are. I mean, and that's what I'm wondering here. Does Ohio State wake up? Do they take this as a major challenge because of what's at stake, them needing to win out? Nebraska's top 10 rolling in, 10th or 9th, whatever you want to go with. That gets their attention for sure. Because right now it seems to me that Ohio State and Urban are just straight up in survival mode. Let's get through this however we need to, run the quarterback, till Michigan. And then all bets are off.
Yeah,
it's a playoff game.
Yeah, because after us they have Maryland and Michigan State. And they should win both those games.
They should, yeah, especially a little payback for Sparty. Okay, you have pressure if you're Ohio State. You're in survival mode, and you have the trends that exist right now. And I know Nebraska just lost. But right now, Ohio State, it looks human. They looked human against Indiana. They looked very human against Wisconsin. They lost after blowing a big lead. I'll classify two touchdowns on the road in the fourth quarter in a wideout at night as a big lead. The fact you're up 21-7 is a giant lead with Franklin and their offense. They didn't close the deal. And right now, Ohio State, it's like Rocky IV. You punch Drago, he bleeds. See, he's human, Rock. And that's how you got to treat it. And I think Nebraska is seizing that. That narrative. For Nebraska, they're empowered right now. They should have beat their nemesis. They're kicking themselves for not. And they want to go take it out on Ohio State. Can they and will they is the question. What you have going in Saturday, too, from a Nebraska fan standpoint, mood. What was your mood like about the Ohio State game this August? Loss, beatdown. Can a blizzard happen to get it off the schedule? Because you don't want to get embarrassed on TV. That's your biggest fear as a Nebraska fan. Well, right now you have optimism. You're riding high. You're confident. You're puffing your chest out. And what a difference one game makes. You go play Wisconsin, 17-17, and it's not like, boy, man, the guys played well. Good for them. That's your feeling. But you're kind of walking away from it going, man, they could have had it.
Should have had it, yep.
They had it. They lost the opportunity. And that's the difference one game can make for you and how you feel about Nebraska. Instead of, oh, crap, it's Ohio State. The team's feeling, it's Ohio State, bring it on. We're going to try and right a wrong that we missed last week against another player nationally. Now, I think Ohio State may have something for him. We'll have predictions later in the week. Still incredibly tough. I don't even want to say they're overlooking Ohio State, but the percentage of confidence with the team is as high as I've seen. They absolutely feel, the word I'm using is empowered and ready to go. From a fan base standpoint, though, do you feel pretty confident? You feel much more confident, yes, obviously, that you're going into Ohio State not quite on a roll offensively, but you're going into Ohio State on a roll defensively. And collectively, you're still the team that put up 10 points in the fourth quarter. You can do that against Wisconsin. You can do it against anybody's defense and get in and get out and survive a road game. This is the most confident, I think, a Nebraska team has felt going on the road in a long, long time. Not to overplay one game, but it's a lot like that amount of confidence you felt like after the Florida State game against Nebraska in 94 Orange Bowl. Different context, obviously. But you feel like, okay, the team may have turned a corner. They proved it against a really, really good squad that night against Texas in 09. And you have optimism, and it's as high as it's been in a long, long time. Off and running on a Tuesday, TJ Henning, Chris Schmidt. Mitch Sherman up next on Hail Varsity.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Jay Moore will be in on Thursday. It's TJ Henning, Chris Schmidt today. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Gorgeous weather. Still time for you to enjoy fall golf at Wilderness Ridge. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Can dial them up at 402-434-5106. Investigate the membership pricing and those membership benefits. Maybe you have time for 9 Saturday morning. Maybe you have time for 18. Fire it up. Chris Thompson, PGA professional, director of golf. Also your dear friend Mike Schuhart, Shuey, director of instruction. Go find time this fall at Wilderness Ridge, WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine with us to talk college football playoff and Nebraska, Ohio State. Hey, Mitch, how are we doing this week?
We're doing well. I'm in a good mood. Game 6 of the World Series tonight, so that makes me happy because the Cubs could lose or we could get Game 7. It's a win-win. Either one of those things is a good result. I like Game 7 of the World Series no matter who's playing, so I'm kind of rooting for that, but not really.
Okay, so let me just ask you this before we do football. The ratio of Cub fans in your neighborhood to you.
Yeah. To me?
Yeah.
Or to Cubs fans to Royals fans? Cubs fans to me. It's like, I mean, just people that I know.
In your neighborhood, though. Say you're walking the dog or you're out and about
I was out and about last night, and there's lots of Cubs talk. Probably 50-1, and that may be underestimating it.
Okay.
But I have lots of backup with Royals fans who are on my side.
Okay. See, always having the Royals reserve is key.
Yeah, we had some Cubs. We were trick-or-treating last night with some people, adults, dressed as Cubs, which, you know, I forced myself to talk to them during the festivities. But I'm hoping for Game 7 because I want everybody to get together. I want to get together with a bunch of Cubs fans and watch Game 7 and see them squirm.
Man, Hayhart approved.
Apparently, right on. Mitch, your reaction to Nebraska Saturday against Wisconsin, and apply that to this Saturday against Ohio State.
Well, my reaction overall was one of thinking that Nebraska showed very well, and you know, I'm sure I'm not saying anything that you guys haven't already said in 2 days of talking about it, but I was impressed with the heart that Nebraska showed. Really impressed with the way that Nebraska played defense. Impressed with the way that Nebraska fought back in the fourth quarter. I didn't think necessarily heading into the fourth quarter, or at least the drive right before the start of the fourth quarter that Nebraska scored on, that this would be the week for the Huskers to have their normal fourth quarter performance, and in particular because of that environment at Camp Randall. But Nebraska proved something that it doesn't necessarily matter where it is, that this team is going to play about the same on the road as it does at home. And I think that's the sign of a strong-minded team and a team that's buying into everything that its coaches are teaching. So those are all good signs. And then, you know, there were some troubling things too. I thought Tommy Armstrong certainly didn't play his best game of the year, and that's putting it nicely. Nebraska's run game still needs some work, and I think that's in large part a result of the offensive line being beat up. But how does it translate to this week? You know, I think they'll go into Columbus with more confidence than I would have expected a week ago, and that's a little bit strange to say after a loss. But I think maybe Nebraska believes that it can win. Win. I don't want to say play well, because I don't think that's the goal of this team or really any team. But I think Nebraska believes that it can win at Ohio State, maybe with a little bit more oomph behind it than it would have a week ago. And then that's because of what happened in Madison. And also, you look at the Buckeyes, and they've struggled the last couple of weeks. Not sure what last week was against Northwestern, if it was a result of the loss from the week before, or if it's just this team showing its true colors and starting to wear down a little bit. But I figured that Ohio State would get stronger week by week as the year went on. It just seemed like that kind of a team being so young, like the 2014 team. And right now it looks like they're going the opposite direction.
Mitch, with Ohio State, do you believe they'll, kind of swallow hard and say, all right, if it's going to take JT running 15, 20 times, so be it. That's our best advantage to defeat Nebraska and moving forward. Are they going to push all in on that, because they've been hesitant to do that? They don't want to do that, but they're not as balanced as they've been in past years, specifically downfield. From a game plan standpoint, do you think they'll make adjustments to, they want to win and they have to win out, but are they willing to kind of put their money where their mouth is with the quarterback run game?
Well, I think they have to. They don't have the game-breaking receivers that they've had the last couple of years. You know, they've still got excellent backs. You know, it's not Ezekiel Elliott out there, but Mike Weber and Curtis Samuel are probably the best 1-2 punch in the Big Ten. Barrett's strength is getting out of the pocket and making plays and running. And it's much like Armstrong. I think as Nebraska has gotten into the second half of the season, Danny Langsdorf has been more hesitant to call Tommy's number in the run game, because he's not 100% healthy, and because you're going up against these teams that are more physical on defense than what you saw early in the year. And you're playing for a lot right now, and you don't want to risk him having to miss a game or having to miss a few series because he takes a hard hit. So Ohio State is dealing with some of those same things with JT Barrett. But, yeah, I agree with you, Chris. The path for both of these teams to win and to produce on offense is to let their quarterbacks do the things that they do best. And that it doesn't necessarily mean they have to run the ball 20 times a game, but I think you have to get them on the edge and let them create, and not expect them to win the game in the pocket. You know, Barrett has a history of doing that more than Armstrong does, but both of them, their strengths are something different.
Mitch, tonight we have the first college football playoff rankings coming out tonight, and obviously the first week doesn't matter as much as the final week. But I'm just curious tonight if you think the Huskers will be in the top 10, because in the past this committee has really favored strength of schedule, and so far Nebraska's strength of schedule hasn't been that strong. Do you think Nebraska's a lock for the top 10 tonight?
Not a lock, but I think it'll be right there, you know, in that 9 to 12 range. You know, for Nebraska, what matters, and then all you need to know as it relates to the college football playoff, is that this team has to win the rest of its games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether they're 12 or 13 or 14, which would be certainly on the low end, if you go to Columbus and take care of business, you know, you beat Minnesota, Maryland, Iowa, and then you win against Michigan, presumably, that's enough. you don't need to. It doesn't matter where this team is in week one. And I'm not getting carried away here. The college football playoff for Nebraska at this point is a little bit of a pipe dream. I mean, even with what we saw last week against a very good Wisconsin team, where Nebraska could have easily walked away a winner. And if Nebraska was 8-0 right now, I don't know that I would be singing all that different a tune. I mean, it would be more enticing. It would be more intriguing for sure to watch this event tonight and maybe see Nebraska show up at number 5. But I don't think all that much changes in regard to the playoff with one loss. You've got to win out if you're Nebraska. A more realistic goal for the Huskers is to try to make it into a New Year's Six Bowl. You know, maybe they can do that at 10-2. Or hey, go out and win this Ohio State game, win the rest of your games. I don't know that I would like Nebraska's chances against Michigan, but it's great for the Huskers to be able to have that conversation right now in November.
Mitch, who do you think comes in at number 2? If Mitch is part of the selection committee, we'll get your 4+1 in a second, but who do you think the committee puts in at 2 behind Bama?
Well, so I guess I'm giving away my 2 here, but I've got Michigan. I think Michigan's answered more questions about its team and done more to prove itself as a well-rounded group than Clemson and Washington. There are knocks, I think, on all of those teams behind all three of those teams behind Alabama, which is a runaway one, I think, at this point. But I'd go with Michigan at 2 over those other two.
The other two, what order?
It doesn't really matter to me. I guess I'll put Clemson 3 and Washington 4. But I think that those teams are relatively even right now, and I don't think it should matter to them either because they're, you know, we talked about Nebraska being in a spot to still control its own destiny. Those teams really control their own destiny. I mean, Michigan controls it so much that. If Ohio State is somehow saddled with another loss before the Buckeyes go to or before the Wolverines go to Columbus, Michigan could lose to Ohio State and then win the next week and still make it at 12-1. So there's if you're in the top 4 right now and you're undefeated, I don't think the order really matters. You feel pretty good about yourself.
Wisconsin, say they completely run the table. And at 11-2, can they get in one of those 4 spots?
Obviously they're going to need some help. They've gotten help already from the Big 12, which is just about out of this thing. you could make an argument that Oklahoma, as a 2-loss team, would have a decent resume if Ohio State and Houston finish strong. West Virginia. If it goes and beats Oklahoma and beats Baylor, yeah, sure. But I'm counting the Big 12 essentially as out at this point. And you know, to me, Wisconsin's in a similar spot. Okay. It's a team that's would need a lot of help. But winning a Big 10 championship and having that 13th data point, which is something that only people in the Big 12 talk about, and people in the Big 10 are like, "What are you talking about, data point?" But that's what they say in Big 12 country. It's a 13th game, whatever. The Big 10 has it. And it would help Wisconsin. I think it would give Wisconsin the edge over a team like Oklahoma. If it does get down to a spot where there's a 2-loss team in the playoff, you would like the Badgers' chances to if they go and win a rematch against Ohio State or Michigan.
Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com. Mitch, we'll run you down next week. Great to catch up. Thanks for a few minutes today.
And my number 5 team is Auburn.
Okay, good call. That's good.
They're playing well.
They're playing outstanding.
Well.
Mitch, be good.
Take care, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good stuff from Mitch Sherman. Safe driving and demand your full attention. One of every 3 traffic fatalities in Nebraska, alcohol-related. Many of those drivers involved buzzed while driving. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Office of Highway Safety. Game 6 thoughts, Cubs. Husker thoughts, Kevin Suits, 10-11 next.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, executive producer of the Journey, Big Ten Network's Journey. Bill Friedman coming up in 1 hour. Rick Pizzo and Blair Kirchhoff. We're trying to run down Eddie Vedder's new best friend, Kevin Suits, 1011 Sports. That's impressive. To sing Go Cubs Go with Eddie Vedder. We'll see if that's urban legend or if it happened. Resident Cub fan. And he can claim Bears fan now since they won last night and covers Nebraska. Does a great job, 1011 Sports. Kevin Suits with us, at Kevin Suits on Twitter. Suitsy, how are we doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing outstanding. How is the nerves, the mood tonight for you?
A little bit on edge. Not going to lie. This is a big one. I think if the Cubs can get through tonight, man, tomorrow's just going to be nuts.
Huh.
They have a chance to win a championship tomorrow if they get through tonight. And I think that with the series moving back to Cleveland, it's going to be a good thing because you throw a Schwarber back in the lineup. I think the pressure maybe is going to alleviate a little bit for the Cubs. Plus, they tasted victory on Sunday night. So I'm nervous, but optimistic.
I need to know how your Game 5 experience was, you and Eddie Vedder. I mean, Coach Cook called it out and saying, wow, I wish I could be like Kevin Suits.
Well, the night I was married is one on my, you know, life days, you know, just amazing days.
Well done.
Three kids, so that's 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
And then 5 and 6 might be some other things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in the top 8.
Okay.
Of best days of my life was going to the World Series, watching my beloved Chicago Cubs win the World or win a game in the World Series. Just going to a game. I mean, if they win or whatever, I was at a Cubs World Series game. Our seats were pretty okay, and the vibe around Wrigleyville was awesome. And you know, just to kind of expand on the mention of Eddie Vedder, we were invited to a party pregame down there in Wrigleyville, and we were there, and there would be no greater example of a fish out of water than my wife and I at this party, but it was a blast. We did a lot of mingling and looking around, and Bill O'Reilly was there.
Okay.
I went to go throw something in the trash, and right as excuse me, because it was pretty packed, drop it in the trash, I turn around and walk back, and I go, I said to my wife, I said, I think that's a pretty famous musician. And she looked, and she goes, yep. We nodded at each other and said, that's Eddie Vedder. So at that point, he had a big entourage with him. I did not talk to him, but we were in the same location, you know, just hours before the Cubs game. And then, of course, he led the seventh inning stretch later that night.
That was awesome. Now, tell me about this party. You said you were a fish out of water. You seemed like a pretty social guy.
The party was awesome.
Right.
It was awesome. And, you know, the way the rooftops go out there in Wrigleyville, you know, they're not really coordinated very well in terms of getting in. Some open at 5, 4, 6, whatever, depending upon the game. And ours, it was it started, I think, at 5 o'clock, and everybody else is lining there, and there's really nobody kind of orchestrating the whole thing. But for us, we just went to the address. We said, we are here with the party that opens at 5 o'clock, and they said, go right on in. And everybody else is lining and waiting because, you know, there's just so many parties along that area. So just with the folks that had put us on the list, we were able to kind of sneak right in and, you know, eat some delicious food and have a few drinks and just mingle with some people. And it was just an unbelievable time. And that was just the kickoff. That was before the game even started.
You're too modest. I mean, that's big time to pull that off. The 2.0 version of Studio 54 pre-Cubs game, and Suitsy's at the party. I love it. Okay, now I need to know about Nebraska-Ohio State and a thought or two on the Wisconsin game.
I'll start with a thought or two on Wisconsin. They needed to win that thing. I mean, there's so many opportunities. Winning the coin flip, Wisconsin missing the field goal late in regulation. And then you get the ball after they missed the PAT. The missed PAT, I was probably within 20 feet Mike Riley and John Perella when they missed that PAT because I was on the field. And you could just sense, like, on their reaction to the missed PAT, it was like, whoa, okay, let's go. And, you know, you felt like that was the window of opportunity. And unfortunately, Nebraska didn't get it done. You don't go through too many games where you get that many breaks, especially the coaching staff last year. They got no breaks. Mm-hmm. In that Wisconsin game, they got several in a short amount of time. So that's kind of my thoughts on Wisconsin. I'm still really impressed with their effort on the road against a pretty good team, and that defense from Wisconsin, as good as advertised. Mm-hmm. As for Ohio State, I'm not going to be fooled by these close games and recent, well, the close game last week, but then the previous week when they lost to Penn State. All told, that team's really, really good. They got some dudes at linebacker that I think are going to create some problems. And offensively, they've got playmakers everywhere. So I think this Ohio State team is bar none the best team Nebraska's going to play this year.
No, they are. And you look at just from a mentality standpoint, that's the difference. Ohio State is kind of searching right now. Nebraska is sure. I mean, they haven't had confidence like this in a long, long time. And I think that could be a difference. Yay or nay, a number of carries for Tommy Armstrong, over under on 20 as we get you out of here on that.
I'm going to go under 20. I think they know that there's a lot of season beyond this game. I don't know if you can afford to have him carry the ball 20 or more times just for the sake of his health. I think that's, because he got, Wisconsin hit hard, and he carried the ball a handful of times against Wisconsin, and they hit him. And so it's going to be that again against Ohio State. So I don't know that he gets 20 carries.
I mean, he had 13, though. I mean, what's another 5 to 7? I understand health and physicality and going up against grown dudes, but that's to me what you're searching for, something on offense. Him throwing it all the time isn't the answer. The run game hadn't been there because of the offensive line. It was better than I thought it would be. But put a little stress on Ohio State, don't you? Make them defend two backs?
Yeah, I get that. I think that the importance of getting Stephen Carter back is it gives you another option offensively.
Oh,
because you look down the line, you know what I mean? Like, because you're right. You've got to really get creative offensively with your game plan, and if you can get Ethan Carter in there, now you've got dump off pass options. Not that you don't without him, but you can let Westerkamp go further down the field. You can let DeMornay come underneath and maybe get a dump off pass to him. But then you got Ethan Carter, so you're going to make their defense account for more if Ethan Carter is on the field, and that should hopefully allow Tommy Armstrong more options and allow Danny Langsdorf more things that he can do with his play calling. So, and I think that's maybe one thing that, maybe Nebraska got away from late in that ball game against Wisconsin was, I don't know that DeMornay got the touches. Maybe he should have. And Brandon Riley, too. I don't know that they took too many shots down the field in the fourth quarter. And Riley had success going downfield. There was a lot of PI, though, going on in that game, not just in the fourth quarter and overtime. I know so many people are stewing over the no call on the what could have been a pass interference on the throw over the middle of the Western camp. That was happening all night long, and it was happening on both sides. It was very clear throughout the game that the officials were going to keep the flag in their pocket.
Suitsy, we'll talk next week, buddy. Thank you.
All right, thank you, guys.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
I suppose that, they have been that team. And every conference probably has that in some fashion for a cycle. You know, we went through that cycle when Pete came into the Pac-12. SC, started to take off and set the standard. And I think that's what Ohio State has done.
Mike Riley, as he was talking Ohio State, back with you to wind down hour one. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. Buckeyes are that. I mean, Michigan also won, not A or B, but kind of tied with Ohio State as the team to beat Wisconsin, the team to get in the West, and the great opportunity. We started the show off talking about optimism and that second chance, not waiting several weeks to another benchmark in the season, but you get them back-to-back if you're Nebraska. They're feeling great about it. And you take down Ohio State. Here's something I believe that does exist in the Big Ten, and it's not talked about. It's not promoted. But if you're Urban Meyer and your team's like Ohio State, you're like Michigan, you're Michigan State, you're the old guard of the Big Ten. Nebraska's been in the league now 5 seasons. I get that. But the talk then was Nebraska's going to roll in here and just kind of, it's Big Ten takeover. Because who was elite? Ohio State was struggling. They had an interim coach because the vest got released. You're going from the Rich Rod to the Hoke era at Michigan. D'Antonio was, okay, they're doing nice things, but they weren't what they've been. Northwestern had kind of been up and down. Fitzgerald's a great coach. And then there's been Wisconsin. And everyone, I think, there's one thing, if you're the old Big Ten guard, you could sit in that conference room and kind of just silently nod to each other. Let's stick it to Nebraska. Not like Big 12 stick it to Nebraska with Texas, but just when you play them, slap them.
Well, didn't we join kind of, I think, when the Big Ten had maybe that 0-for-5 day on New Year's Eve Bowl?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's shifted.
Yeah.
I mean, they
really
get Urban
has.
Meyer. They get James Franklin. They have Harbaugh and his left fielder glove. I mean, so its conference has got all sorts of props. You have a national championship. You have Michigan looking incredible. And that's the question I had about Michigan was, okay, what's their quarterback about? Mm-hmm. They don't have an elite running back, but they don't need one because their lines of scrimmage are that good, and they've got Peppers. So that's something I think may be communicated, but I believe is a core belief for Urban Meyer and Ohio State. Look, it's Nebraska. This is our conference. And Ohio State wants to remind Nebraska that they're still playing in their conference. That's something that's just there. Under the surface, every time Nebraska kicks off a Big Ten game, but specifically against some of the old guard heavyweights. I want to remind you about Sauter Heyman. Go see your friends at Sauter Heyman today. Rick and the gang can give you that diamond you've been searching for a lifetime. 1 carat diamonds. Select 1 carat diamonds with Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman. Now only $100 a month. Don't shortchange your sweetheart. 12th and O, downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln around West and Grand Island. SauterHeyman.com. $100 a month. 1 carat diamonds. Check them out.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day, day by day, we get better and better. We get better and better. We get
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, welcome in. Just got done doing another great program, BTN Live. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet Time with Mr. Pizzo at BTN Rick Pizzo on Twitter. Rick, great sports night. How are you doing?
Things are going well, my man. It is it's a great sports night, no doubt, for us here in the city of Chicago. We'd love to see one more Wrigley, but we'll take a win in Cleveland either way.
Oh, I hear you. I need to hear the story about Game 3 because, I mean, I've got to buy my Dad of the Year T-shirt. You're going to get one as a gift. You got to go check out Game 3, correct?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I brought my 9-year-old son with me, and I knew it was a special night when he told me during the seventh inning stretch that he wanted the Cubs to win, but even if they lost, he didn't care because the night was so amazing. And it really was. To be at the first World Series game at Wrigley in 71 years was literally chills for 3.5 hours. And it was 66 degrees out, so it wasn't because of the weather.
How'd you pull it off? Because you had the buddy that got rid of the premium seats, correct?
I did. We'll just say that we worked a little bit of Wrigley Field Cubs magic.
Okay, there we go.
So how confident are you feeling about tonight then?
I feel great about tonight. I think Arrieta is a big game pitcher. He's been so good on the road, and I'm not so sure, even John Lester, I'm not so sure I'd rather have anybody with the ball in their hand in this situation. As good as Kyle Hendricks has been, I'm a little nervous, though, about Game 7 because Kluber has just been out of this world throughout the entire postseason for this team.
Well, he's been good, and we'll see how it shakes out tonight. College football playoffs will be revealed here within the next couple of hours. I want to go back to Madison, though, Rick, and your takeaway with Nebraska. Did Nebraska perform like you expected, or were you surprised by how well they played in a place that had been pretty tough for them?
Yeah, defensively, I was really impressed. I mean, I think especially against the pass. I mean, they just completely shut down any type of passing attack that Wisconsin had, made them one-dimensional. But they were beat by a guy who I don't think they expected to beat him, in Dario Ogunbowale, who rushes for a 120, the game winner, did it in just 11 carries. And that Wisconsin offensive line is getting a lot better. You know, the one thing that I will say, though, is I was really disappointed with Tommy Armstrong. And, you know, I got gashed on Twitter by Husker fans after our show on Saturday night, because I said flat out, I think he's a guy that in this situation has to be better than 12 of 31 with two picks. And I stand by that. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from what they did, taking Wisconsin into overtime at a very tough place to play. But I stand by the fact that if Tommy Armstrong plays a better game, they win that game in regulation without ever having to go to overtime. And they got to get that fixed, because they still control their destiny in the West, and they have another monster game this weekend. If Tommy can play better in the clutch, play the rest of this season the way that he played in that Oregon game, Nebraska's going to be the Big Ten West champ. If he plays the way they played last night or last Saturday in Madison, there's no way.
It kind of comes down to the quarterbacks, doesn't it, Saturday night? And Armstrong's got to be better. How will, you know, Ohio State use Barrett when it comes to the run game? I mean, that's been the talk all week here has been, we're early into the week, but the Ohio State passing attack downfield, they've got sick athletes. They've got a bunch of great players. I know they're young, but they're still Ohio State. What's the sense you get about Ohio State? Is their confidence as high as it's been in past years? Do they still look like Ohio State to you, or do you think they're teetering a bit?
No, they still look as talented, but their confidence is not where it was after the Oklahoma game when they went to Norman and basically scored at will against Oklahoma. They're struggling a little bit offensively. I mean, they have two, three maybe really good offensive linemen and then two questions on the offensive line. But what they don't have is, in years past, I think Mike Weber's a very good back. I think Curtis Samuel is a terrific all-around football player. But whether it was Ezekiel Elliott or Carlos Hyde, over the past 4 or 5 years, they've had a guy in that power spread offense that could get you 6 yards every single time he touched the ball and every now and then could break one. They don't have that guy this year, and so defenses are able to focus a little bit more on the pass game. It takes JT away a little bit in the run game from the quarterback perspective. He has to run it too often for Ohio State's liking, and he can't really look downfield. If you watch Ohio State's pass game right now, it's basically all screen passes, little bubble throws to Samuel on the outside or quick screen passes to the wide receiver and try to let him get a couple. They have no intermediate to deep intermediate passing game, and I think that's a really dangerous spot to be in.
With Nebraska, TJ and I were talking about this earlier, what a difference a game makes. Now, Nebraska felt confident. They played well enough to win. They feel like they've missed one. Coach Riley said in the presser yesterday he thinks his team will react. You can be sad or mad about a close loss against a big-time team. He thinks his team will be mad, and they're going to go into Columbus with some swagger. That's all well and good. But with Nebraska and kind of what's at stake here, do you think they're – once they get to Columbus, I should say, will they – will the moment hit them, or do you think they'll be okay? Are they going to be better because of what happened last Saturday?
Yeah, I think they'll be fine. I mean, if they were able to handle themselves in that environment in prime time under the lights in Madison, they'll be able to do the exact same thing in Columbus. I think it helps them. I mean, I know that Ohio State won last week and Nebraska lost, but I watched both those games start to finish, and I came out of last weekend thinking Nebraska has a better chance to beat Ohio State than I thought going into last weekend before those teams played Wisconsin and played Northwestern respectively. So I think that just like last week, I told you guys I thought it was going to be a one-possession game. Mm-hmm. I was going to come down to the final minutes and end up in overtime. I would say the same thing about the Ohio State game. I think there's going to be another remarkably close football game.
Other games this weekend, before we get to the playoff, Rick, Iowa at Penn State, your thoughts on that. And then you look at Northwestern and Wisconsin. What's your takes on both of those?
Yeah, Penn State's offense is really humming right now. I mean, unless Iowa found some magical elixir during the bye week, I think Penn State's the favorite there. The other game is really intriguing to me because Wisconsin's quarterback play was subpar, no question, against Nebraska. You know, Corey Clement wasn't really able to do much. It was all Ogunbowale. And Northwestern has been finding different ways to win or threaten teams like they did against Ohio State. I think this is a tricky, tricky game for Wisconsin. I can see this one going either way, though I think the Badgers have a slight edge from the physicality standpoint.
Okay, and before we get into the playoff, the third down in overtime with Westerkamp, do you have a take on the, as Nebraska fans would say, pass interference that wasn't called, or as Wisconsin fans would say, the good no call because it had been a boxing match all game long between defensive backs and wideouts, no matter what helmet was being worn?
Yeah, we just broke it down, actually, on BCN Live. So I'm not sure if your guys, you know, in your area will hear it here coming up in a little bit. But basically, the explanation from the Big Ten officials office was that if Westerkamp had not slowed running his pass route, if he had continued to run through T.J. Watt, then it would have been pass interference. But the referee basically could not determine whether the contact would have taken place had Westerkamp continued to run, and instead determined that because he slowed up, that actually initiated and caused the contact. Now, I'm not saying that I'm on one side or other side. That's simply the explanation from the officials' office, and I'm guessing, as you said, all the Husker fans will think that is complete baloney, and all the Badger fans will think it's absolute brilliant.
There you go. The explanation's been given. Big Ten Buffet, Rick Pizzo. Rick, where does Michigan land in the college football playoff? What number?
I think they'll be at number two. I think they're going to get credit for not just the wins that they have, but the margin of victory in their wins. Clemson, that you could certainly argue, has more impressive wins, beating Louisville, beating Florida State, beating Auburn, which at the beginning of the year didn't look very good, but now looks pretty good. I still think Michigan is going to be slightly ahead of Clemson for the number two spot, with Alabama obviously a clear number one and Washington the obvious choice in number four.
Where would you slot Ohio State and Wisconsin and even Nebraska?
Yeah, I would actually slot Ohio State seventh. I think they're going to be slightly behind both Louisville and Texas A&M. They're very close to Texas A&M. I think the difference there is the quality of loss. They both lost one game, Ohio State to Penn State, A&M to Alabama. So I think the quality of loss edge goes slightly to A&M. I have Louisville up there over Ohio State because they have a couple of impressive wins, just as Ohio State does. And their one loss, obviously, you can't get more quality than a last possession road loss to Clemson. So I think that's where I have Ohio State at seven. I think Wisconsin is probably going to be right behind Ohio State. And I wouldn't be surprised, by the way, if Ohio State is six ahead of A&M. I think Wisconsin is going to be right there at eight. The question for me with Nebraska, is Nebraska going to be 9, 10, or 11? How do they match up against teams like Florida? How do they match up against teams like Auburn? Are they given credit for that win over Oregon when Oregon was not as good as we thought they were in week three? They're going to be right on the cusp of that top 10.
Hey, Rick, just curious because they're playing tonight and they are in Big Ten country and beat two Big Ten teams and the last of the undefeated of the group of five, Western Michigan. Do they have more than a 1% chance to get in the college football playoff if they were to go 13-0, or are they just going to need a ton of help?
Yeah, I don't think it happens. I just don't think that there is ever going to be a day where a group of five team gets in. That's just not the way that this committee is built. I mean, it would have to be the most impressive non-conference schedule. You would have to have wins. Their wins are over Northwestern and Illinois. Now, those are major conference teams, but Illinois has had a brutal year, and Northwestern, for all the hype that we're giving them and all the press, I mean, they are still fighting just to get into the postseason. I mean, you'd have to have one of those years where it's a Boise State team who plays Oklahoma and somebody else from the SEC and wins both those games in the non-conference. I mean, that's the only way it's going to happen. There's just too much good football being played at the Power Five schools. That being said, I think Western Michigan, when they get into one of these bowl games, New Year's Six bowl games, will have a great chance to beat whoever it is that they end up playing.
Lastly, Rick, and thanks so much for your time. I know you're getting ready for a reaction to the college football playoff, but is there any way that a two-loss Wisconsin team, say they run the table, gets in over a one-loss based on their strength of schedule. Say Louisville is in the conversation. Obviously, they're really good. A&M may tack on another loss. Auburn's got to play Alabama. And just the merry-go-round we're talking about here. But if Wisconsin wins out, do they have a sound enough argument to get in, is my question.
I don't think they do, only because I think that I can't see Alabama, Michigan, Clemson, or Washington having more than one loss. And the remaining schedules that those teams have, even if they don't get into the playoff, now that's the one monkey that you could throw in the wrench. Mm-hmm. If crazy stuff happens, if Cal or Washington State unranked teams beat Washington, if Clemson loses to South Carolina in the final week of the season, if Alabama gets shocked by somebody, and after LSU this weekend, they have absolutely nobody until they play Auburn, if Michigan somehow falls to Iowa, all those dominoes would have to fall down, and Wisconsin would have to go to the Big Ten championship game and do what Ohio State did a few years ago and win by, you know, a 50 ball. I mean, you do that, then you're sending a huge message. Other than that, it is going to be, I don't want to say impossible, but I think it's a 1% chance at best today.
Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet at BTN. Rick Pizzo, catch him on BTN Live and Big Ten and beyond. And, of course, your weekends with all the Big Ten Network coverage. Rick, be good. Thanks for a few minutes, bud.
Chris, TJ, great to catch up, guys. Be good.
You too, man. Appreciate it. Good stuff. You know, I'm waving the Wisconsin flag that if they win this, and listen, the whole world here wants to watch Nebraska play either Ohio State or Michigan or, God forbid, Penn State in the Big Ten title game. Say that doesn't happen, Wisconsin's schedule. They're 3-2 against top tens. And I know
impressive.
Two is more than one. Yay, I passed math today. But it's way more impressive. At this point, it's more impressive. A&M still, if they get out of the SEC West with just one loss.
Yeah.
You know, but who's to say? I mean, A&M and LSU are going to hook up later on.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll all work itself out. Work yourself out for a tasty Zipline, is what I'm telling you. Zipline Brewing Company. Marcus and the guys at Zipline want you to know that there is something for you. Of course, they started brewing in Lincoln, record sales the last 4 years, and they are accredited nationally because they deserve it. Gold medal winning Copper Alt, and that nationally recognized IPA. And if you have a different taste, maybe you're not a Copper Alt guy, which you're crazy, or you're not an IPA guy, they have 40 different beers, one for your taste. Two locations in Lincoln, out on Westo, or the new location, the Beer Hall, is magnificent. It's awesome, 56th and Pine Lake. It's a modern German beer hall, 24 taps, neighborhood bar with community tables. That means if you're coming from central or western Nebraska or northeast Nebraska or wherever you are across the great state of Nebraska, and you're coming in for holidays, you're coming in for the two home games, and I'm talking Maryland or Minnesota, or you're just in for some tournaments. And kids, make a beeline to find Zipline and one of their tap rooms, either Westo or the 56th and Pine Lake Beer Hall, that German Beer Hall. Hours of that German Beer Hall, Monday through Saturday, noon to 10, Sunday, noon to 6. And if you're out west, try a Zipline tonight. Or this weekend, available on draft or in six packs across the state. Find it at your favorite bottle shop or local grocery. And when you're visiting, be sure to see Zipline and their two tap rooms. Zipline Brewing Company, great folks. Brewed here in Lincoln, but poured for all of Nebraska. Zipline Brewing Company. A quick timeout. Talk some baseball. Also some college football. Blair Kirchhoff, Kansas City Star, on the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text Hail to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMoore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
15 minutes away, Bill Friedman, producer of BTN's Journey. The Journey, and we'll remember Sam Foltz tonight That's 8 o'clock Central. As a Nebraska fan, you'll tune in for that. It'll be emotional, and it's a tremendous tribute. Welcome in with the Kansas City Star, at Blair Kirkhoff on Twitter. Knows a lot about college football and the Major League Baseball postseason. Blair, great to have you back on. How you doing?
Good to be on, Chris. I'm doing great. I hope you are, too.
Doing well. And you had a chance to catch a little Nebraska in prime time last Saturday. As a guy who's covered college football at such a high level, your reaction, what were you expecting going in?
You know, I guess I'd be lying if I said I thought that game was going to go the way the odds makers said. I always believe that if a team hears long enough that it doesn't belong, you know, in the rankings where it is, or on the field with the opponent, that they take that to heart and use it. I think there was some of that going on last week. So I expected a close game, and we got it. And you know, it's just a shame. You know, Nebraska had opportunities there at the end. When you get a good kicker missing a field goal and an extra point late, you like to see a team take advantage of that. But of course, the Huskers couldn't. Still, I was impressed. I'll tell you what, having seen a lot of Big 12 football in the last several years, it was good to see a good Big 10 game with a lot of good defense being played.
Yeah, defense was at a premium that night, and you look at Nebraska and the missed opportunities. Do they move forward? I think they do. I think they're in an even better mental state, more of an angry chip on their shoulder. It's a larger chip than being told you're no good. They have a larger chip moving forward against Ohio State, and a quick turnaround, but it's another opportunity. Nebraska didn't take advantage in Camp Randall a week ago. Do you think Nebraska can take advantage Saturday night, or do you think Ohio State kind of snaps out of their funk?
You know, I wonder. Without piecing together, you know, specific matchups in this game, and I tend to look at things, you know, where teams' emotions are, and I wonder if Nebraska looks at Ohio State or at least goes into this game with a little bit of a letdown. Do they let the Wisconsin game beat them twice? You know, the disappointment after not getting it done at Camp Randall, and then to face a terrific opponent in Ohio State. And on the other hand, Buckeyes kind of fortunate to get out of out of last weekend with a win over Northwestern. So I don't know where the Ohio State hearts and minds are. I think they see Nebraska as an opportunity to kind of get back into. You know, they've got to keep their national championship hopes alive, for both teams, really, to keep their college football playoff hopes alive. They've got to get it done this weekend. So there's a lot at stake, maybe even more so than last week with Nebraska Wisconsin. I think certainly the winner of Cornhuskers Buckeye stays alive for the national championship, and the other, I can't see a two-loss team getting there.
So switching to some pro football, it sounds like you have some news that maybe broke about half an hour ago with the Chiefs and Jamaal Charles. Is that correct, Blair?
Yeah, what a day for the Chiefs. Just in the last hour, we're learning that Jamaal Charles is going on the injured reserve list and his season is over. And this comes several hours after they lost some starting offensive lineman, Parker Ranger. The starting guard, offensive guard, also on the IR. So the injury to the offensive lineman occurred in the Colts game on Sunday. Jamaal Charles has been he's just never seemed to fully recovered from the torn ACL that ended his season after five games last year. So he went and saw Dr. Andrews yesterday, and now he's done for the season. And to complicate matters further at that position, Spencer Ware, who'd been having a really nice season as the Chiefs starting running back, suffered a concussion on Sunday at Indianapolis, left the game, and did not return. And the concern is he will not be available this Sunday either. So the Chiefs earlier today went out and signed Bishop Sankey off the Patriots practice squad, and he will be in uniform on Sunday when the Chiefs play the Jacksonville Jaguars here at Arrowhead.
Blair Kirkhoff, a couple more minutes. Hale Varsity Radio, Kansas City Star at Blair Kirkhoff on Twitter. Blair, let's talk college football playoff. And you've been a part of these mock meetings. You've been close to it, covering the postseason since it's existed. And do you have a feel for, I mean, yeah, strength of schedule and head-to-head, all that's kind of laid out. The criteria is laid out. But just vibe-wise with this committee, with the new chairman, do you feel how the debate's going to go when it comes to not only placing teams 2 through 4, but also those on the outside looking in? What do you think's going to be of the utmost value?
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a good question. I'll tell you why, because committees, there's turnover on this committee, not just at the chairman's role, but in several other places too. And every committee has a little bit different view of the world. We've seen it forever in basketball, and some years schedule strength means a lot, and you know, playing in mid-majors means, you know, having great records in mid-majors means a lot. Some years it doesn't mean as much. And you know, I think that the message, this is only the third year of the College Football Playoff Committee, and the message that they have tried to convey is pretty clear, that they will reward teams that have played ambitious non-conference schedules. And but we'll get the first hint tonight when the first poll is released, and I think we all can guess at the top four.
Yeah.
There may be a little blip in the order after Alabama, but I think we can all agree that Michigan, Clemson, and Washington are going to be in the top four, along with the Crimson Tide. I suspect Ohio State and Louisville will be 6-5 or 5-6 in some order, and then it'll be kind of interesting to see how it lines up after that. So it's something to keep in mind. The first 2 years of the ranking, when the first ranking came out 2 years ago, Ohio State was number 16. And the Buckeyes went on to win the national championship. And last year, Oklahoma was number 15, and they went on to play in the national semifinals. So it wouldn't be stunning if we look at the rankings tonight and we see somebody who's a little low, you know, outside of the top 8 or 9, and see them with maybe one loss right now, but with a chance to win their conference, come off the pace and get there at the end. Maybe an SEC team or a Big Ten team like Nebraska. You know, that is still a possibility. There's so much college football left and so many good games that I dare say that the four that'll be announced tonight as the top four will not be the four that'll play in the national semifinals.
Do you have a candidate in mind that could make a charge? What team's floating out there? LSU has a couple losses already, but Auburn's at a one loss, but they should be in the top 10. A&M. Also a one loss mark for them.
All of those plus Nebraska. You got to put,
yeah.
And I think Wisconsin as well. Here's the thing. The 2 years of the college football playoff, we've only had conference champions in the national semifinals. Is this going to be the year where a non-conference champion gets selected and leaves two conference champions out? Let's say the ACC. Let's say Clemson and Louisville make it to the Final Four, along with, let's just say, Alabama and Michigan. That means the Pac-12 and the Big 12 won't have teams in the league. We do know that the committee has said and stated that their preference is to select conference champions over non-conference champions. But this may be the year that gets put to a test, and I'll be very interested to see what's going to happen the first time that the committee has to face that situation where a one-loss non-conference champion team looks stronger than maybe a two-loss conference champion team.
Blair, we've got 2 minutes here. Let's talk World Series Game 6. You've seen a lot of Cleveland baseball in reference to them playing Kansas City. The Cubs, can they get through tonight to get on to a Game 7? Are you wowed by what Cleveland's done this year?
No, and it's because I've seen them all year. What wowed me was how they just own the Royals. The Royals were an 81-81 team this year, and if it weren't for the Indians, the Royals I think would have been an 87-88 win team. But Indians were so good all year long against Kansas City, a good Kansas City team, that maybe people who follow the American League Central were the only ones who thought that the Indians were going to beat the Cubs. I get the Cubs story. I love the Cubs story. I love how it's drawing people back to, you know, watching baseball. I love that the set a ratings record, or at least a ratings high, on Sunday night for Game 5. But no, the Indians with a bullpen, kind of stealing a process that the Royals perfected last year in their World Series run. Unhittable bullpen and getting enough starting pitching, great base running, good, very, very good defense. I think Cleveland's the better team. I think the American League was better than the National League this year, and if the Indians don't win it tonight, I think Kluber wins it in Game 7 tomorrow.
Blair Kirkhoff, Kansas City Star. You can read him, kcstar.com, and, of course, at Blair Kirkhoff on Twitter. Blair, we'll catch up here down the road, talk some more college football, and always appreciate your time. Thanks for a few minutes.
Absolutely. Take care, you guys.
See you. Awesome stuff, Blair Kirkhoff. That's the thing, and he's the guy that'll know this college football selection committee. It's different. It's a different world, as he put it best. It's a different world with different, I don't even want to call it agendas, but just ideas or beliefs with what's most important. And I think you got to look at strength of schedule this year specifically over a conference championship. If you didn't play anybody out of conference, and that kind of hurts Nebraska with Oregon, but I think you need to also look at Wyoming. I mean, Wyoming's raging right now, and they just beat Boise. Boise's been that one team that's always got consideration as let's get into the Power Five party because of what they did in the Fiesta Bowl. And they've been great for the most part. But, you know, where Oregon doesn't help you, Wyoming keeps rolling. It could help you in reference to Nebraska. Wisconsin, do they keep winning out? Do they win out, and does Nebraska keep winning out? And then do you get an unbeaten Michigan, or do you get a one-loss Ohio State, or do you get a two-loss Penn State? An amazing program tonight, The Journey, Big Ten Network, on Sam Foltz. Bill Friedman, producer, next.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Thanks for your time. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Blackshirt Jay back on a Thursday. And you love watching the Big Ten Network. We try and bring on a number of BTN guys each week because of their knowledge and insight, and then some of their award-winning programming on top of coverage is The Journey. And it's so excellent, with the behind the scenes, with the camera work, the storytelling, the writing, and producer of The Journey with us now, Bill Friedman on Hail Varsity Radio. A special journey tonight as thoughts with the Foltz family and so many Nebraskans and the team. Sam Foltz exclusively featured on The Journey with so many of his teammates tonight, and you'll want to catch that at 8 o'clock Central. Bill, thanks for your time. Thanks for this project, and thanks for this episode tonight. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. It's wonderful to talk to you again. And Bill, tell me a little bit, a sneak peek, if you can, what folks will watch when they tune in for the journey tonight in reference to the devotion to Sam Foltz.
Yeah, it's a unique situation for us. You know, we've done over 100 episodes of our shows, you know, going dating back to 2010, and we've never really devoted a whole episode to one subject. And we felt this was the right thing to do. You know, there are so many layers to this story, certainly at Nebraska, but also with Wisconsin a little bit, and some of the other schools in the Big Ten, that we felt this was a story that could, you know, really use a full episode treatment. And I think it's a really special show. I know the production team of our crew here, Matt Engel and David Parfit, the lead producers, and John Castelli, Mija Dodd, and Daniel Lee, our lead editors here, really feel proud about this. And I think for all of us, this felt more like a privilege to get the opportunity to tell the story than anything else. And we hope that we've done it justice. And we think that Husker Nation will really enjoy and appreciate the content that we've put together this evening at 8 Central.
8 Central, it is The Journey tonight, Big Ten Network, and The Journey will be all about Fulte and Sam Fulte, the impact he had on Nebraska, his teammates. And you mentioned his impact with Gaglione and Wisconsin, and also Colby Delahousse, who survived the accident. And how did you approach the interviews? Because it's such a sad and just heartbreaking topic, but you were able to sit down with Sam's folks, and you're able to sit down with some of Sam's closest peers.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when we approach this story with the same mindset we have when we approach any story we do, and that is we want to tell it, in the fullest manner possible. And that involved, in this case, certainly initially reaching out to Nebraska, to Keith Mann and his great staff there with the Huskers, and requesting some interviews with Coach Riley, Tommy Armstrong, Spencer Lindsay, Sam Hahn, Drew Brown. So that was step one, and you know, we also expressed to the Huskers our interest in trying to get in touch with Sam's parents, Jill and Gerald, who are amazing people. And you know, that ended up happening, and we were able to go out to their home, and Matt Engel sat down with them and talked to them about this. And David, our other producer, went up to Madison to talk to Rafael Gaglione. And then also we flew him down to Baton Rouge to talk to Colby, which, you know, is another very interesting part of this story. So, I just feel like whenever we do a story, we want to have all the relevant voices to tell it. And you know, we felt that was the right mix for this project.
Well, The Journey tonight, Big Ten Network, 8 o'clock Central. The Journey will be exclusively about late Husker great and better person Sam Fulte, and you'll want to catch the episode tonight. When going down to LSU with Delahousse, he survived the accident. How is that, without giving too much of the episode away tonight? In that, it's a simple question, but I mean, he's got to be in just absolute shock and bewilderment right now that he survived something like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think in talking to Colby, the thing that really struck our producer was how, you know, he actually thanked our producer, and he said, "I've been wanting to talk about this," you know. And I think that it's interesting to hear that, because you would think, hey, this guy had a traumatic, just tragic experience that he was a part of. You think that maybe he wouldn't want to, you know, rehash it and go back, but he felt very honored that we gave him the opportunity to discuss it. And he was very candid about it. You know, one of the great lines that he had, you know, last Saturday when Nebraska went up to Wisconsin, which was kind of the real impetus for us wanting to do it this week, because of, you know, obviously Wisconsin was where the accident took place, and Rafael Gaglione changed his number to 27 to honor Sam, was a friend with him. You know, LSU didn't play. They didn't have a game last Saturday. And so we asked Colby in our interview, you know, are you going to watch the game? He said yes, and he said he kind of wishes that it would end in a tie, you know, which was almost prophetic as the game went to overtime. So it was very, very interesting that was his take on it, and I'm sure he was watching and thinking of a lot of people that evening.
What stuck out to you about Sam's parents through this interview process?
Well, I mean, first of all, they're amazing. You know, you see where, you know, everyone – that we spoke to had such great things to say about Sam, and you see where it comes from. You know, he's obviously well-raised, terrific parents, terrific family, you know, obviously an incredibly difficult situation that they're enduring and still grieving right now. But their desire to want to try to keep things as normal as possible for everyone else on the team, to want to be there for the team. You know, they've attended every game this year and plan on attending every game. I mean, I think that, you know, there's really nothing more I need to say. I think that kind of speaks volumes about the quality of these people.
Bill Friedman with us, producer, The Journey, Big Ten Network, and it's on this evening, 8 o'clock Central, the show in its entirety about Sam Fulte. Lastly, Bill, a thought and a reaction on Riley and his input on the episode tonight.
Well, I think it's even a little bit bigger than Coach Riley. I think it's just amazing to see the way the entire Nebraska football community has reacted and kind of moved forward from this, you know, and how they the way that they've gone to great lengths to keep Sam as part of the team, whether it be his cleats hanging in the weight room or his locker still made up, or the specialists who carry his jersey out to be part of the bench. You know, it's not lip service. They really miss this guy, and they really want him to be around. And I think that speaks to the character of the men that Coach Riley has on the team, and for Coach to understand what this means to the state. You know, sadly, this is something that Nebraska has dealt with before. You know, with the passing of Brooks back in 1996. You know, we did a documentary film on that, and so we're very familiar with it as well. And so I think it's something, you know, there's what I learned from doing that story is there's just an incredible reverence that the state has for homegrown kids. And there's a real pride that exists in the state of Nebraska when there's a Nebraska kid on the roster. And Sam was that. And I think that pride will continue and should continue. I think it's incredibly admirable, you know, what the program and Coach Riley have done. You know, and it's
Bill, hang on one second for me.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, who backed up Jay? Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Producer Bill Friedman, Big Ten Network, The Journey on Sam Foltz tonight. Bill, we were up against a break, and I did not want to cut you off more so than I did. Apologize about that. But a final thought here on tonight's episode. I interrupted you. Continue on. Sorry about that.
No problem. I just say I really feel this will be a special episode for the entire state of Nebraska and even the Big Ten. I think it really shows the class and the relationships that exist between schools and you know, kind of the right way to do things. And so I really hope and urge everyone to tune in at 8 p.m. Central tonight. I know there's a small baseball game going on at that hour too, but if you miss it, it'll re-air a bunch this week. You know, the content's available online as well, so you know, find a way to consume it. And I really think that this is a story that everyone in Nebraska should see and hopefully will find worthwhile.
Absolutely. Bill Friedman, Big Ten Network producer, The Journey on Sam Foltz tonight. And Bill, best to you, and thanks for your work, and thanks for your crew's work with everything, and I'm sure it'll be awesome. We'll be watching, and I know the state of Nebraska will be watching. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for your interest in having me on.
Take care, Bill. Appreciate Bye-bye. It. Bill Friedman with us here on Hail Varsity Radio, and just something that you'll not want to see, but have to see tonight if you're part of the Nebraska fandom, and they are so good at the storytelling, and it's just an amazing mixture of insight behind the scenes and just the videography that occurs with the storytelling. It's perfect, and it'll be heart-wrenching as all get out tonight, but it'll be something that you'll be proud about, I believe.
Yeah, Emmy award-winning show, so always one of the best.
Yep. Do you have a prediction for tonight? Are you shifting? Are you changing? Are you going with the Cubs? Are you going with the Tribe? I think it's a good thing they're out of Chicago. Obviously, Schwarber. Joe West is behind home plate.
Yeah.
And his strike zone's like the fourth smallest in baseball.
Yeah.
Arrieta's money.
And Joe West doesn't want to draw any attention to himself.
No, because it's not about him.
Yeah.
I think the Cubs get it done.
I think
tonight with the Chubbies, but I think they go to a game seven. And I said Cleveland in 7.
I was going to say, you said Cleveland in 7?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought maybe 6. Yeah.
This show I said Cleveland in 7.
Yeah, I'm going Cleveland in 7.
You spread enough bad predictions around, you'll be right one of the times.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Cubs get it done tonight as well, and then there's going to be an epic game 7 tomorrow night.
That'll be outstanding. You can take a break during baseball, though, to watch The Journey.
Or record it, yeah.
At 8 o'clock. Good stuff. TJ Henning, Chris Schmidt, And busy show today. Many thanks to our guests. Thanks to Mitch Sherman and Kevin Suits. Rick Pizzo jumping on before they get back on air with the college football playoff breakdown. Blair Kirchhoff, awesome. Great insight to the selection committee. He's been a part of that process. And then you just heard from Bill Friedman, producer of The Journey for the Big Ten Network. Tomorrow on the program, we will run down Brad Edwards of ESPN. And it's a Wednesday, so you know it's Jerry DiNardo joining us on a Wednesday. And excited about that special show tomorrow and throughout the rest of the week, getting you ready for Nebraska, Ohio State. TJ Henning, Chris Schmidt, Hale Varsity, back at you tomorrow at 4. Thanks.